Shalom. Being that we have Yom Yerushalayim ahead of us, we're going to learn about Yom Yerushalayim. So let's look at the sheet together. And we're going to see that the beauty of Yerushalayim, hi Kaylee, the beauty of Yerushalayim is the complexity of Yerushalayim. And today's shiur is going to help you understand politics in general, and most particularly politics in Israel. And what Rav Kook is going to do today is, by the way, this is something that I've mentioned many times in a lot of different forums when I was representing religious Zionism to rightists, left-wing, Jews, non-Jews, Christians, and anybody who hears this summary of all of the ideologies in the world into three categories is really blown away, because it's really so ingenious, and the relationship between the three, that is really the secret of Yerushalayim. So let's start with Tehillim, Kuf Chaf Bet, source number one, where David HaMelech, as you know, he did not see the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Nevertheless, that was his dream. He bought the Harabait. And Shir HaMalot LeDavid, Samachti Ba'omrim Li Beit Hashem Nelech. David HaMelech is imagining that he sees Yerushalayim as she is built. And people are telling him, and he's happy, let's go up to Yerushalayim. Be'omdot hayu ragleinu b'sharayich Yerushalayim. Our feet stood in the gates of Yerushalayim. You all know that there are a lot of different gates of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim habnuya ki'ir shechubah layachdav. Yerushalayim, when she is built, she is a city which encompasses, which unites it all. And in fact, if I were to ask you, what does Yerushalayim unite? Any answer that you give is probably found in the Parashanim, in the commentaries. Yerushalayim unites the heaven and the earth. Yerushalayim shel mala and Yerushalayim shel mata. Yerushalayim unites all of Am Yisrael. Everybody comes up on Aliyah LeRegel. Yerushalayim unites the children of Rachel and the children of Leah. Right split in the middle between Binyamin and Yehuda. And Yerushalayim, as we'll see, really unites. David HaMelech is going to tell us what she unites. Shesham alu shvatim shivteya edut liYisrael lodot l'shem Hashem. That's the first aspect of Yerushalayim. That the Beit HaMikdash, when you talk about going up on Aliyah LeRegel, all 12 tribes meet in the Beit HaMikdash. And that's the first thing that we think about in Yerushalayim HaBnuya. But as we'll see, it's not just the Beit HaMikdash. Continues David HaMelech, Ki shama yashvu kisot lemishpat, kisot lebeit David. There are two other aspects of Yerushalayim. One is kisot lemishpat, that is the Sanhedrin. And the other is kisot lebeit David. It is the throne, or the castle of the king of Israel. In other words, I suggest, as you take notes, you divide your page into three different columns, because these are the three aspects of Yerushalayim. There is the national aspect, the religious aspect, and the universal aspect. And the king, obviously, he is in charge of the national aspect. The king is in charge of the army, the government, taxes. The Sanhedrin, that's the religious aspect. The Sanhedrin is in charge of the Nasi, who's head of the Sanhedrin. They are in charge of questions on Shabbat, on Kashrut, on Dinei Nezikin. And the third aspect is the Beit HaMikdash, which is not just for Jews, but it's also for Goyim. As we all remember, Ki Beiti Beit Tfilah Yikare Lechol Ha'amim. The Goyim also used to go on Aliyah LeRegel to Yerushalayim. We know from Josephus that the Goyim also brought Korbanot to the Beit HaMikdash. And Bekitzur, we see here that there is the Kisot Lemishpat, on which sits the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. There is Kisot LeBeit David, on which sits the king. And there is also, let's look in Yirmiyahu, source 2, Paragimel, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ba'etahi Yekru'u Yerushalayim Kisei Hashem. This is the third Kisei, the throne of God. V'nikvu Eleha Kol HaGoyim, all of the goyim, all the nations of the world, will come l'shem Hashem l'Yerushalayim. V'lo yalchu od acharish re'ut libam hara. They won't serve idolatry anymore, but they will also come to Yerushalayim. And by the way, already today, in modern Yerushalayim, all three of these aspects are already taking place. Right? If you take a bus from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim, and you're making conversation with the guy or the girl next to you, say, where are you going in Yerushalayim? And they will say, I'm going to a demonstration outside the Knesset, or outside the Prime Minister's office, or I have a problem with my taxes, or I have problems with my water, or problems with my, right? Any national problem, you go to Yerushalayim, because that's the national capital of Israel. Another guy might tell you, why is he going to Yerushalayim? Because he has a religious issue. He's going to ask a question, halacha question. There are more poskim in Yerushalayim than any city in the world. There are more batei din in Yerushalayim than any city in the world. There are more poskim in Yerushalayim, more yeshivot in Yerushalayim than any city in the world. And that is the second aspect of Yerushalayim, the religious aspect. But if you see the person on the bus, say he's non-Jewish, and you ask him, where are you going in Yerushalayim? He's not interested in the national aspect of Yerushalayim, because he has his own nation, he has his own prime minister, he has his own parliament, he has his own flag, he has his own language. He's also, a non-Jew is not interested in the religious aspect of Yerushalayim, because he doesn't go to a Din Torah, and he's not interested in Shabbat or Kashrut. But a non-Jew, he will be going to the Kotel, to Harabait. And that is Kisei Hashem. That is the universal aspect. And who sits on that throne? The Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol, we are told we should be Hevemi Talmidav Shel Aaron, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Ohev Et Abriot. The Kohen Gadol symbolizes the Beit HaMikdash, which symbolizes the universal or humanistic aspect of Yerushalayim, that which is Meshutaf, that we have in common with all the nations of the world. Now, if we have three thrones, and on each throne there is a head, on each head we need a crown. And we see in Pirkei Avot, in Source 5.5, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, Shlosha ktarimim, Keter Torah, Keter Keuna, v'Keter Malchut. Again, this is the triumvirate, where Keter Torah, the Nasi, that of the Sanhedrin, where's Keter Torah? Keter Keuna is the Kohen Gadol, Keter Malchut is the king, the national aspect. You may have heard that Yerushalayim has 70 nicknames, but you will notice every single one of the nicknames falls into these three categories. For example, let's look in Source 3, Yeshayahu Perek Aleph Pasuk Kavav, Vashiva Shoftayich Kevarishuna, V'yoatzayich Kevatchila, I will return your Sanhedrin like the days of yore, your judges. Acharechen Yikarei Lach Ir HaTzedek, Kirya Ne'emana. Which aspect of Yerushalayim is called Ir HaTzedek? That's the Sanhedrin. That is the religious aspect. In Source 4, in Shmuel Bet, Perikei Pasuk Zayin, Vayokod David Metzudat Zion, Hi Ir David. Which aspect, where would you put Ir David? That obviously is the national aspect. Most of the names of Yerushalayim, like Har HaMoriah, Har HaMor, Chatzrot Beit Hashem, refer to the Beit HaMikdash. So we see here that the three aspects of Yerushalayim are constant. And if you think, why do we need three rulers? You probably all learned about in ancient Rome, where they came up with the original democracy, the checks and balance system also was a triumvirate. Today also, in the United States, probably in Canada too, you have the legislative, right? That is the Congress. You have the executive, that is the president. And you have the judicial, the Supreme Court. And each one of these three keeps the other two in check. This is the checks and balance system, where if you think about it, obviously it has to be three. Because if there's one leader, one is Hashem, Echad Miyodea, there's only one, and that's God. And if a person wants to be a sole leader, that's a dictator. Nobody wants to live under a dictator. If there are two leaders, what's going to be the problem? There's going to be a tie. There's going to be a disagreement. So you need at least three to have a tiebreaker, to have at least in any disagreement, to have two against one. But as we'll see in the Maharal and in Rav Kook, it's not just technical that you need three branches of leadership. It's also ideological, as we'll see. Now, if I were to ask you, historically, what was the relationship between the king, the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, and the Kohen Gadol? Anybody remember from Jewish history, or you could take an educated guess, what do you think was the relationship between these three leaders? An educated guess? You know what? Look at your communities. Any of your parents involved in the local shul, or local day school? Yeah? So you know in the local shul, when you're a kid, you think that the rabbi, he's the one who's in charge of the shul. On the other hand, the board, they say, hey, we hire the rabbi, we can fire the rabbi. On the third hand, there's usually a multimillionaire who built the building. He really is the one who makes all the decisions. You can't move without him, right? And the same thing in day schools. My father was the principal of the school, day school, and he actually almost got to Hamilton. He was asked to be the principal of Hamilton decades ago. And as children, you always think that the principal runs the school. But then you go to the parents, teachers, council, and the board, the committee, the parents, they say, what do you mean? We hire the principal, we fire the principal. On the third hand, again, there's the millionaire who built the building. He's the one who pays for all the scholarships, and he's the one, you can't move without him. So who really runs the school? There are a lot of power struggles. Wherever there is power, there are power struggles. And this, also we know from Jewish history, just today, B'mikra, in Parshat Bechukotai, Midrash Tanchuma, you all remember the story of Bat Yiftach, the daughter of Yiftach, right? Remember, Yiftach makes a neder and says, if Hashem gives me victory, the first thing that comes to greet me, I will give him as a korban. And who was it? His daughter. Got a problem. Now, all of you know enough halacha, that you know that there's a very simple solution. What's the solution? If you make a neder that you can't fulfill, what are you supposed to do? Hatarat nedarim. Right? Before Yom Kippur, some do it before Rosh Hashanah. Why didn't Yiftach do Hatarat nedarim? Chazal tell us in the Midrash that in fact Yiftach called Pinchas. Pinchas was the Kohen Gadol. And he said, listen, I worded my neder very poorly, and I got a problem. Can you do Hatarat Nedarim? Pinchas says, sure, of course, come first thing in the morning. Yiftach says, wait, I am the shofet. I'm like the king. It's really more mechubad that you should come to me. To which Pinchas answered, what do you mean? I'm the Kohen Gadol. Not only that, Pinchas was the head of the Sanhedrin. He has two ktarim, And you, Yiftach, you only have one Keter. You should come to me. No, you should come to me. And because of that power struggle, Yiftach didn't do Hatarat Nedarim. Right? Anybody remember the story of Yeravam ben Nevat? Yeravam ben Nevat was anointed by Achia Shiloni as a punishment to Shlomo to take 10 tribes and make Mamlechet Yisrael. No problem. What was the problem? When he built a Mizbeach in Beit El and appointed himself as the Kohen Gadol. And the rabbis came to him and they said, Lo dai lecha keter malchut shelakafte la'atzmecha gam keter kihuna. Leave the crown for the Kohanim. You're a king. Anybody remember in Jewish history where there was the opposite problem, where the Kohanim took Keter Melucha? Right? The Chashmonaim dynasty. Where there also, Chazal say the opposite. They said, Lo dai lechem, it's not enough that you're Kohanim. Why do you take the Keter for the kingdom? The national leadership that belongs to the house of David. Maybe you remember the story of Alexander Yanai. Alexander Yanai, who was the king, and the Sanhedrin accused him of being a Tzeduki. And they called him to come to the Sanhedrin. They wanted to interrogate him. And Alexander Yanai comes, and his servant comes, and he brings the king a chair. And the king sits down. And the Sanhedrin told him, excuse me, your highness should stand up for Kavod HaTorah. To which Alexander Yanai answered, no, you should stand up for me. I am the king. I have the Kavod of Israel. And there was a standoff until Alexander Yanai, to paraphrase Joseph Stalin, once Joseph Stalin had a standoff with the Pope. You know, the Pope told him, maybe kill less people. And Stalin asked rhetorically, does anybody remember how many battalions does the Pope have? How many soldiers does he have? In other words, I'm stronger than you are. Shut up. I tell you what to do. And that is what Alexander Yanai told the Sanhedrin. He killed the entire Sanhedrin. The only one who escaped was Shimon ben Shetach, his brother-in-law. Girls, you see that there was always this power struggle between the national leadership, the universal leadership, and the religious leadership. And you know what? Just let's think about it. Bezrat Hashem, we're back in Yerushalayim. We're in the Geula process, as we learned. We are in Yemot HaMashiach. However, let's just think practically. What's going to happen if, imagine Bezrat Hashem, we all go on Aliyah L'Regel to give the Korban Pesach, and you know Shaar Yafo? Say the king wants to come in through Shaar Yafo, and at the same time, the Kohen Gadol wants to come into Shaar Yafo, and at the same time, the Nasi wants to come into Shaar Yafo. You know, if you're from England and you're a gentleman, you would say, after you. No, after you. After you. Here you got a problem. Because Melech Shemachal al Kvodo ain't Kvodo Machul. Do you know that the king of Israel is not allowed to forego his honor? Right? When a rabbi comes into a room, you stand up. The Rav can sit down. When the Kohen Gadol comes into a room, everybody stands up in respect. He can say, sit down. The only one who cannot say, sit down, is the king of Israel. Because Melech Shemachal al Kvodo, he is not allowed to forego his honor. He's not allowed to let somebody go before him. Now, what's the problem? The Kohen Gadol also has a problem. He has, you remember the tzitz, the golden tzitz on his forehead? That it says Kodesh Liyud Kei Vav Kei. In his Choshen Mishpat, in the breastplate, he has the Urim V'Tumim, the holy name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How can you go before the Kohen Gadol? And on the third hand, anybody who's seen a Rosh Yeshiva or a Gadol Ador, anybody ever see a Gadol Ador come to the Kotel? And he comes with 20, 30, 40 bodyguards, yeshiva boys, and they clear everybody out of the way, make room for the rabbi. And even though the Gadol Ador is allowed to forego his honor, the odds are pretty good that his students will not allow others to go before him into Shaar Yafo. Do you all understand the problem? And by the way, we're not talking about egos. We're talking about serious halachic issues. And now you understand why David HaMelech continues back in source number one. Sha'alu shlom Yerushalayim yishlayu o'avayich. Halavai there should be shalom in Yerushalayim. Yishalom b'cheleich shalva ba'armenotayich. Halavai there should be shalom in the palaces of Yerushalayim. Why palaces? Why is it written in plural? Because it's not only the king's palace. It's also the palace of the Beit HaMikdash, and also it's the palace of Torah. And why do we need a special tefillah for Shalom Yerushalayim? Because there never was Shalom in Yerushalayim. There was always this infighting. And this is what we say every Friday night. Ufros aleinu sukat shlomecha. Hashem, please spread your Shalom over us. Baruch atah Hashem apore sukat shalom aleinu. Give shalom to us, val kol amo Yisrael, all of Israel, and then we add, va'al Yerushalayim. Why do we need a special tefillah for Yerushalayim? Because again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to put all of the national leadership on one mountain, which is just asking for problems. What's the solution? The solution is obviously to remember who gives the power and the authority to each one of the three crowns. Who chose Malchut Beit David and Shevet Yehuda, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Who chose the Nasi, the Sanhedrin, who gave the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Who appointed Aharon and his family as the Kohanim? It all comes from the same aspect. But the question is, how is that supposed to work? And here, we're going to take it a step deeper and more ideological, as Rav Kook always does. Let's look together in Source 9. Rav Kook writes in Sefer Orot, page Ayin, an unbelievable political analysis of every country in the world, and every ideology in the world, and every machloket in the world. Shlosha kochot mitavkim ka'et b'machanenu. There are three camps which are struggling. Three political parties are wrestling with each other. Hamilchama b'nehem nikereti biyoter be'eretz Yisrael. In Israel, we suffer from the infighting of the Jewish people between these three camps in a very extreme way. Avapulatami pulanim shechet michayei ha'uma bichlal. But in truth, it didn't start today. If you look in throughout Jewish history, there were always three ideologies. Vishur shehem kvuim hem betoch hakara hachuderet b'merchavei ruach ha'adam. And inevitably there are going to be three ideologies because there are three ideologies in mankind. Chevra, in every country, in every democracy, you have a right-wing party, which is the more nationalist party. In America, what's that called? That's the Republican Party. On the other hand, you have a more universal or humanistic party. In America, that's called the Democratic Party. In Israel, who's the right-wing party? The Likud. Who is the left-wing party? The Labor, or now blue and white, is sort of left-wing. Yesh Atid. Now, in some democracies, like in Israel, they also allow to have religious parties. And that depends on how the country defines separation of church and state. But in Israel, this is the Aguda party, this is the Shas party, to a certain extent, this is the Beit Yehudi or the Mizrahi party. And Rav Kook, in his time, there was almost a civil war between the Irgun, the Etzel, and the Haganah. Did you hear about that? Between the Stern Gang and the Haganah, between the right wing and the left wing. And the question is, what is the solution? And first of all, Rav Kook says, first understand what the problem is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and by the way, this is based on the Maharal, he writes, you know, the Maharal, like a lot of philosophers, was also a mathematician. Pythagoras, Lahavdil, you remember? He was also a mathematician and also a philosopher. What is the philosophy of the triangle? The triangle, you have A, B, and C, where each one of the sides is bound, limited by the other side. A is limited by B here, is limited by C here. B is limited here and limited here. In other words, each one of the ideologies is to make sure that the other two ideologies don't get to an extreme. Do you all see that? Extremism is always bad. As the Rambam writes, the golden way is the Derech HaMemutza. Because what happens if you have, for example, David Ben-Gurion? David Ben-Gurion, if you were to ask him what is Judaism, he would say, it's a nationality. It is the Israeli flag, the Israeli army, the Hebrew language, the state of Israel. The problem was that Ben-Gurion also thought that in order to be nationalistic, he had to be anti-religious. He said, we need a new type of Jew. And also, he was anti-universal. David Ben-Gurion could not stand the United Nations. And by the way, today, it's hard for us to blame him, because 3 years after the Holocaust, where the Goyim didn't lift a finger to save 6 million Jews, Ben-Gurion knew that, in his words, it's not important what the Goyim say. It's important what the Jews do. On the other hand, if you go to Mea She'arim and you ask them, what is Judaism? What will they say? Of course, it's a religion. It's learning Torah. It's Shabbat. It's Kashrut. Well, you ask them, well, what about the army? What about the flag? What about the language? What about the government? I'll say, oh, that's for the chilonim, that's for the non-religious. And they think that in the name of religion, they have to be anti-nationalist. They also are anti-humanist, anti-universal. In the Haredi community in general, they don't like the idea of going to university because that is a step in the direction of assimilation. And I understand them. But what Rav Kook is pointing out is that the universal humanistic approach is also one-third of Judaism. That's one-third of Judaism. Musar. You can't be a Naval Birshut HaTorah. Half of the mitzvot are mitzvot Bein Adam L'Chavero. And these are humanistic, universal ideas that the Goyim also believe in. What is the problem, again? The problem is not that people lean in this direction or stress that stress. As a matter of fact, it's natural. If I look at my children, for example, I have a daughter. She is vegetarian. And she is a social worker. And her connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Torah is very clearly through the humanism universal ideals. And I don't have a problem with that, because she also observes Shabbat, and she dresses tznua. And also she's nationalist, and she went to Sherut Lumi, and she goes to all the demonstrations. Now, if her connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a 50%, 25-25 mixture, that's inevitable. Because I also have a son who's now in the army, who his connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mainly through the national. Now, the national army is also a mitzvah. So Rav Kook points out that all of these are really religious. When he calls this camp the religious camp, he's referring to Shabbat, Kashrut, religion in the limited sense of the term, the way it was in Galut. But the land of Israel is also Eretz HaKodesh. The language is Lashon HaKodesh. There's a mitzvah to serve in the army. So my son, he is going to be an officer now. He's considering making a career in the army. I don't have a problem with that at all, because he davens 3 times a day, and he also learns Musar. On the third hand, I had a son. Today, yeshivas are closed. But when my son was in yeshiva, his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mainly through Torah and mitzvot and Gemara. And I don't have a problem with that, because he's also going to serve in the army. He doesn't have to do 3 years. Okay, so we'll do 6 months. And he also learns Musar. And he also volunteers to help people. He volunteers on Shabbatot for kids with special needs. And what Rav Kook is telling us is that inevitable, in a nation of 12 million Jews, inevitably there are going to be those who are leaning a little stronger in this direction, and those who are leaning a little in that direction. Obviously, the Shulchan Aruch obligates us all. But inevitably, there are going to be people who their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through Zionism, or Aliyah, or going to demonstrations or building the land, and somebody else through the other camps. Not only is this inevitable, if we look today at Jewish history, it's something very interesting. Because when I was your age, when I came to Israel, the focus in our religious Zionism was to take down the mechitza between religion and Zionism. Because 50 years ago, the real nationalist Zionists, they were non-religious. And the real Rabbanim and Talmidei Chachamim were not Zionists. And who were the religious Zionists? Not this, not that, a little of this, a little of that. Girls, it's not that way anymore. Today, the religious Zionist yeshivot are at just a high level as the Haredim yeshivot. And the girls who go to your midrasha dress as much as sanu, as tsnua, and as halachic as the girls in Bnei Brak do. And similarly, when I came to Israel, there were very few officers, religious officers in the army. Today, most of the officers are not non-religious anymore. They are religious. So religious and Zionism today are working together. And anybody who knows Israeli politics knows that the reason why there were 3 elections was because Benjamin Netanyahu had in the religious national bloc almost 60 seats. And you could not have a government without that bloc. This is the majority of Israel today. Where is the problem in your generation? I would go so far as to say that the time has come to stop calling ourselves religious Zionists and to start calling ourselves religious Zionist humanists. Because this mechitza is where the challenge is. Because today, if you go to a leftist, he thinks that they have a monopoly on Musar, on humanism, on morality. I once was giving a talk in Tel Aviv, and I usually leave my pistol in my case, and I forgot it. I came in with my pistol in my belt, and there was a lot of leftists live in Tel Aviv, and as I come in, I heard 2 guys on my left, one says to the other, "Look at this mitnachel, this settler. I bet he eats Arabs for breakfast." So I stopped in my tracks, and I said to him, "Excuse me?" He wasn't expecting me to hear him. I said, "Can I ask you a question?" I asked him, "How many hours a week do you learn of Musar, of morality?" He said, "What?" I told him, "In my midrasha, we have a couple hours a week in Mesilat Yesharim, Orchot Tzadikim, Shmoneh Prakim, Shmirat HaLashon. We religious Zionists spend a lot of time on morality. If you ask the average Israeli who are the most volunteering people in the country, he will say the Shirut Le'umi girls. They are the first ones to help, they are the first ones to volunteer. Davka, because they're religious Zionist, it makes them more humanist, not less humanist. And this is Yerushalayim HaBnuya. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put all three on the same mountain to stress that all three have to go together. Now, if any of you are broad enough, you should be like David HaMelech. 33, 33, 33. To also be super religious, super nationalist, and super musari. Not everybody is that broad. And that's not a problem. It's natural. This is Yerushalayim HaBnuya, and it's Rav Kook's Hashkafa in a nutshell. Somebody once asked Rav Kook, how do I know that you're Rav Tzvi Yehuda? I know Rav Kook is right. He says, because everybody is right. He says, everyone is right. He says, you have to be right-wing, you have to be left-wing, and also you have to be religious. And that's how we know that Rav Kook is right. Any questions?